This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
It's World Cup time. Tournament kicking off this week. Football fans around the globe have been waiting for this. But even if you're not into sport, there's a lot to watch with this World Cup, whether we're talking tensions between hosting countries, visa rows, ticket price controversy. There's a bit to get into. G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're going to talk the World Cup and hearing from the Australians who have forked out a lot of money to go.
It's definitely once in a lifetime I can do it. And yeah, there's no other sport that comes close to it, I don't think.
Yeah, if you're a massive football fan, I want to know how you're feeling. Are you excited? Are you nervous? What do you make of all the planning and the build-up to this World Cup? Message in 0439 757 555. Also coming up on Hack, a lot of condemnation over some billboards about Victorian Premier Jacinta Allen. Politicians across the political divide calling them out as misogyny, as sexism. We're going to get into that. First, though,
Hack. President Trump playing down the military tit for tat, insisting a deal is still close.
On Triple J.
If you were keeping an eye across the headlines over the past couple of days, some pretty worrying stuff out of the Middle East. Iran and Israel attacking each other. A ceasefire that started a couple of months ago, looking over potentially for good. But then the strike stopped. So there's fresh hope. But something else has also been getting a bit of attention over the past day, and that's the relationship between US President Donald Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Hack. US President Donald Trump has revealed he swore at Israel's leader Benjamin Netanyahu,
calling him crazy.
I'm saving your ass. Everybody hates you now. Everybody hates Israel because of this.
Clearly, tensions are high. They have been for some months now. This war is really damaging him politically.
The negotiation itself has gone very well, actually. Very well.
On Triple J.
Yeah, what's going on? Donald Trump reportedly telling off Benjamin Netanyahu recently. Well, let's get into all of this with an expert. And joining us now on Hack, Jessica Gnauer, an associate professor in international relations at the University of New South Wales. Jess, thank you so much for your time.
No worries, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Some really tense words, it appears, were exchanged in a phone call between Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump last week. Donald Trump saying Netanyahu doesn't call the shots. I mean, what do you think? Is the US-Israel relationship souring?
So overall and in the bigger picture, the US-Israel relationship remains very strong. So structurally, it's still very sound. But there's certainly a moment of clear tension here. And we have actually seen this from President Trump before. So President Trump actually, even with his sort of closest partners around the world, and I would definitely put Benjamin Netanyahu into that camp, doesn't hesitate to show dissatisfaction or displeasure where he has more of a domestic concern or a personal interest that he thinks is being damaged by that partner. So essentially Trump does not want Netanyahu to continue with his ongoing military campaign in Lebanon. Netanyahu is continuing at, you know, quite a pace with quite big costs being incurred there as well. And of course, this is then compromising the quite fragile ceasefire with Iran. And we've seen recently this real tit for tat between Israel and Iran directly. So Trump is displeased and he is showing that. But I would say that underlying that, the relationship remains quite steady and quite stable.
Donald Trump being displeased, do you think that is about this conflict dragging on? Or do you think it has more to do with how it's being perceived by Americans at home?
Absolutely. So I think that for Trump now, he wants the ceasefire with Iran to hold. And he's had real issues getting to some kind of more permanent agreement with the Iranian regime just because both sides sit so far apart on core issues and none of those really fundamental issues have been resolved and there haven't really been serious attempts to resolve them by the Trump administration so far. So Trump wants the ceasefire to hold and that is primarily about a domestic audience. So in the US context, there's an increasing exhaustion with the war. you know, attention span of publics tends to be quite short anyway. People want to move on. They want to see some kind of conclusion. And yet Benjamin Netanyahu is in quite a different position in terms of his own domestic population. So the domestic interests of these two different leaders are almost pulling them in different directions, where Benjamin Netanyahu is looking sort of further to the right of himself in his own kind of domestic context and very much wants to continue both with the war against Iran and the war against Hezbollah in Lebanon. And I think this is where Trump fundamentally misunderstands the war between the US and Israel and the Iranian regime, in that he thinks it's almost a bilateral war between the US and the Iranian regime, but it's really a regional war. And for Israel, just as much as for the Iranian regime or for Hezbollah, this is absolutely a regional war. And the front with Hezbollah, Israel's front with Hezbollah and Israel's front with Iran are both part of the same war and the same conflict. And it's very hard to separate them completely for actors in the region, no matter how much Trump might want to do so.
What would happen if the United States withdrew its support of Israel's military action?
I don't think we will see a situation where the US would fully withdraw military support from Israel. But you're absolutely correct that the US does have a lot of leverage over Israel. And what I actually expect is going to happen is that if Trump thinks that Israel's actions are going to severely, you know, threaten the ceasefire, that he will bring some of that leverage to bear. And we've seen that before in the past. So, for example, in that 12-day war a year ago between the US and Israel and Iran, it was really the US who decided that that war needed to stop. And then the Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu essentially stopped because Trump wanted it to stop.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Dr. Jessica Ganauer, an expert in global conflict at UNSW, and we're talking about the Israel-United States relationship. Jess, I mean, we also have both the United States and Israel coming up to votes later this year, elections in the coming months, the midterms in the United States, and Israel also got a vote coming up later this year. Do you think that's adding to this real anxiety that we might be seeing from some of the leaders?
I think that's absolutely on the minds of both Trump and Netanyahu, and is actually one of the factors that is pulling them in opposite directions. So for Trump, he's thinking that he wants some sort of calm in the US war with the Iranian regime at least a couple of months out from those midterm elections in November. So he doesn't just want the ceasefire to hold, but he wants to sort of maintain this cessation of hostilities through till the end of the year. And he will probably succeed in doing so if Israel doesn't sort of spoil that for the US in a way. So on the other hand, for Benjamin Netanyahu, it might surprise us here in Australia, but there's actually quite strong support within the Israeli domestic population for Israel's war with Hezbollah, which has now extended, you know, quite deep into Lebanon. And that's because of the ongoing attacks from Hezbollah into northern Israel. So Benjamin Netanyahu is also eyeing his own domestic elections. And he is sort of thinking that probably the only way that he can cling on to political power is to try to, again, emphasize this narrative of Israel being under threat and he himself being sort of the best actor to defend Israel against external threats. So definitely both actors have this on their minds, and it is creating quite a lot of tension in the relationship and the way that they're dealing with the current, admittedly very shaky, ceasefire with Iran.
Yeah, obviously we've seen some escalation over the weekend, Tehran launching missiles at Israel in retaliation for a strike on Beirut. Then we had Israel hitting what it says were military sites in the Islamic Republic. Things have quietened down a bit now, but do you think it is likely that there's going to be a bigger escalation soon?
I actually don't think so. And the main reason is that because President Trump himself clearly wants the ceasefire to hold, I think that he will be able to make that happen. So first of all, by ensuring that the US doesn't re-engage in full-scale military combat with the Iranian regime, and I don't expect that to happen. And secondly, by trying to rein in Benjamin Netanyahu. And I think that ultimately probably the US is the only country who has that sort of leverage over Israel, and I think that Trump will succeed in doing so. So I think what we're going to see between now and probably the end of the year is a continuation of the current ceasefire, but still without any kind of real substantial political agreement on the key issues, which will also mean that we're going to see those tensions continuing around the Strait of Hormuz, which unfortunately for countries like us here in Australia, that means that we can pretty much expect probably between now and the end of the year that there'll continue to be disruptions to supply chains and those high petrol prices that we've been seeing in recent months.
Dr. Jessica Ganauer from UNSW, very much appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Dave. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, there's quite a few thoughts coming through on this one. Someone saying Israel under Netanyahu is the biggest threat to world peace right now. That person saying Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't want peace. Someone else saying they think Donald Trump is an embarrassment and no one calls him out. The whole country is off my map until 28, that person saying. And someone else saying maybe Trump shouldn't have started this war in the first place. Yeah, some big issues at play. We'll keep across it.
Hack.
There are a lot of keyboard warriors who just think politicians should shut up and get on with the job. This is why that is no good idea.
On Triple J.
But we're going to turn back to domestic politics now. And the state election may not be until November, but things are already getting very full on in Victoria when it comes to campaigning. Over the weekend, things thrown into overdrive after Premier Jacinta Allen slammed a billboard that's been doing the rounds in Melbourne in recent weeks with AI-generated images of her and the phrase, "Ditch the Witch." Now, it's not just the Premier who's condemned this, also the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, the former Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, and the Victorian opposition leader, Jess Wilson. It's been called sexist, misogynistic. Some are saying it's a sign of a decline in our political discourse. But then there's Pauline Hanson saying it's just part of politics. What do you think? I'm keen on your thoughts on this one, particularly if you are in Victoria. Message in 0439 757 555. Ariana Lucente has the story.
Did you draw more attention to the mobile billboard by posting about it?
Having the privilege of standing here as Premier and having the opportunity to call out sexism against women in all its forms, positions like mine, it demands that response.
Recently, a digital billboard truck has been spotted driving around Melbourne CBD, emblazoned with images of the Victorian Premier Jacinta Allen in a witch hat.
A huge, like, physical billboard driving through her city calling her a witch is some of the absolute worst.
In massive writing, it has "Ditch the Witch" plastered all over.
I'm also not going to stand back and let young girls see this sort of material and think that it's normal because no one chooses to call it out. Well, I'm going to call it out.
A Melbourne sex work club, Gotham City, has confirmed it was involved with funding the billboards, apparently along with other businesses. There are reports it cost more than $100,000. And the club owner, Frank Puleo, reckons the sign isn't sexist, instead saying, quote, "It's basically what the Victorian public feel." The Ditch the Witch slogan might sound familiar, because it is.
I was offended when the Leader of the Opposition went outside in the front of Parliament and stood next to a sign that said, "Ditch the Witch."
Yeah, about 15 years ago, Tony Abbott was speaking at an anti-carbon tax rally in front of a sign that also said, "Ditch the Witch," targeting Prime Minister Julia Gillard at the time. It instigated her famous misogyny speech in 2012, directly responding to then-opposition leader Tony Abbott.
I say to the Leader of the Opposition, I will not be lectured about sexism and misogyny by this man. I will not. And the government will not be lectured about sexism and misogyny by this man. Not now, not ever.
In a statement this week, Julia Gillard said she was disgusted to see, quote, "this tired old trope resurrected." But why would a politically targeted billboard truck be driving around? Well, the Victorian election is coming into sight, coming up in late November. Jacinta Allen's popularity has been struggling. A recent poll showed that Labor's primary vote had slumped to 23%, below the Coalition at 27% and One Nation at 25%. And a majority of voters think it's time for Allen to be replaced as Victorian Labor leader. Plus, there's speculation she could be facing a leadership challenge.
It's understood a significant number of Labor MPs are hoping to oust her within the next 2 to 6 weeks, as the left and right factions both grow anxious about an election wipeout in November.
She has copped criticism for her handling of the CFMEU corruption scandal, but the Premier is batting off the criticism, the rumours, and she has taken a strong stance against the mobile ads.
It's sexist, it's wrong. And I'm calling it out for young women and girls, and also two boys, who need to see that this behaviour is condemned, not barracked.
And the campaign actually has many politicians seeing eye to eye on this one, including Victorian opposition leader Jess Wilson.
Of course it's inappropriate, and that sort of language, that sort of discourse should never be used in politics. And, you know, we shouldn't see this happening on our streets.
Federal Deputy Opposition Leader Jane Hume too.
It's perfectly fair and reasonable to criticise a policy. It's perfectly fair and reasonable to criticise a party. It's perfectly fair and reasonable to criticise a politician. But you don't need to go to gender in order to do that. Using sexist language is unacceptable.
And the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, who says she's the best person to lead the Victorian Labor Party.
What worries me is the misogyny that's involved there. The sexist campaign targeting the Victorian Premier is totally unacceptable and has no place in public life.
But One Nation leader Pauline Hanson wasn't so concerned.
Suck it up, sweetheart.
Because she says she has copped it before.
Right, if you've seen what's happened to me over the years, I remember years ago Tim Fisher called me a witch and I should be burned at the stake. So I've been tagged that long before you.
Hack on Triple J.
Arianna Lucente reporting there, and messages coming through from you, hearing your voices on the text line. Someone says, in a civil society, you should attack the policy, not the person. Another person saying, this isn't just about whether you support or oppose Jacinta Allan. In a democracy, criticism of politicians is fair game, but calling a female leader a witch carries a weight that many people seem determined to ignore. You don't have to agree with Jacinta Allan to recognise that language matters, that person says. Somebody else, though, saying, I just think there are bigger issues to be worried about. And someone else saying, the billboard is disgusting and displays the worst sexism and misogyny of politics. All right, we're going to move on.
Hack.
The 2026 FIFA World Cup is finally here, and it's massive.
On Triple J.
Yeah, let's talk the World Cup, because a lot of people are excited, and fair enough, it's one of the biggest sporting events on the planet, the Football World Cup. It comes around once every 4 years and draws huge crowds, both in person and obviously on TV. But it's not without controversy. And this year's event has attracted a fair bit of it, from concerns about ticket prices to visa issues, the US president calling for one of the teams to be replaced. Are you going to be watching the World Cup? Do you think the Socceroos have a good chance? Message in 0439 757 555. In a bit, we're going to unpack some of these broader issues around the event itself. But first, Jackson Worthington has been speaking to some young Aussies who have decided to head over to America for the Cup.
The World Cup is one of the biggest sporting events in the world. Every 4 years, it draws global attention and makes headlines. And not always for good news stories. This year, it's drawn controversy for dynamic pricing and the move by FIFA President Gianni Infantino to present Donald Trump with a peace prize. But for fans, it's once in a lifetime.
Been a mad fan for most of my life, and it's always been, I guess, a dream or a goal to go to a World Cup.
Caleb's in his 20s, and on Wednesday, he's hopping on a long-haul flight to Canada to watch the Socceroos.
I'm going over by myself and meeting up with a pretty large tour organisation. I think there's about 500 of us.
This trip is the culmination of a lifelong dream.
The first time that soccer or football really entered my world was the qualification for the 2006 World Cup, and then the run that Australia went on in that World Cup.
Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He scores!
This edition of the World Cup is being played across North America, with games in the US, Canada and Mexico. It's the biggest tournament ever, with 48 teams competing across the group stage. Australia's first game against Turkey is in Vancouver, then the Socceroos are heading to Seattle to play the US, with the last group game against Paraguay in California. The Socceroos squad has 17 players that will be making their World Cup debut.
It is a young squad. I think we've shown that we're not afraid to play the youngsters. Will they be better in 4 and 8 years? Without a doubt. But that's not to say they're not good enough now.
Coach Tony Popovich reckons they have the right mix of youth and experience.
I don't need anyone to dampen the expectation. They should believe, they should love to see these boys play and have the mix of the experience and the youngsters.
One of the most interesting names in the squad is 22-year-old Christian Volpato, who represented Italy as a junior.
Volpato has now chosen his allegiance with Australia. I absolutely love that. I know a lot of fans are split on this. We need our best team on the pitch.
Sarah Walsh is a former Matilda and will be covering the World Cup with SBS. She reckons Popovich has set Australia up for the best chance of success.
There's not a lot of expectation on the Socceroos, and I think that's a good thing. And when I say that, there's high expectations from Australia, and there's high expectations from the team, high expectations from Popovich, the coach, but he will prepare them well for that.
From a fan perspective at a World Cup, really what you're thinking is, can we get out of the groups? You know, and everything that happens from there really feels like a bonus.
For fans like Caleb, the results are almost secondary. He's going for the atmosphere.
It's just this big kind of festival-like experience. And as someone who loves a good multi-day festival, getting to experience that but for a couple of weeks straight is obviously very special. You can't control the results, right, but you can control what you take out of the event and the people you meet.
But the trip hasn't come cheap. Dynamic pricing and high demand have priced a lot of people out of attending.
Yeah, it's been tough, and I would really describe it as death by a thousand cuts.
Caleb's paid thousands for tickets, flights and accommodation.
When you go back to the original bid for the World Cup, there were all these promises in there around ticket capping and ticket allocations, and most of them have been at least in some way broken.
FIFA reckons the pricing reflects existing market practices and that it's offered group stage tickets from $60 American.
It's definitely once in a lifetime I can do it and relax.
Jacob's counting the cost of the World Cup too. He's heading over to the States with his girlfriend. They'll be seeing Australia, Croatia and Brazil throughout the group stage. And despite the costs, Jacob reckons it'll be worth it.
Yeah, there's no other sport that comes close to it, I don't think.
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there. Yeah, a lot of people very excited about the prospects of the World Cup, what it's going to mean, about watching it, the results, but also keen to get into some of the detail as well. We've got Thomas from Sydney on the text line saying, sure, there's been errors in the build-up to the World Cup, but the buzz that builds inside you is just unstoppable. I'm pumped for, firstly, Friday, but even more for Sunday when Australia plays Turkey. Yeah, well, look, let's get into some of the issues around the World Cup a bit more with someone who knows a fair bit about this, Hunter Fujak, Senior Lecturer in Sports Management at Deakin Uni. He's with us now. G'day, Hunter. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
So there's a lot around this World Cup that's got people interested, as I said. If we stick to the news theme just for a bit, Hunter, from a purely geopolitical standpoint, the World Cup is being co-hosted this year by the US, Mexico and Canada. There's been some tensions between some of those countries in recent years. Is that causing some issues?
100%. This World Cup is a lot like the couple that books a non-refundable holiday, then breaks up and has to continue on with the holiday and awkwardly get through it. So even though Trump was the president when they were awarded the World Cup in 2018, it's certainly a different world now to what it was then.
Yeah, very good analogy, Hunter. People were saying, oh, I get it now. I actually really get it. I mean, Iran is competing at the World Cup, right? How is all of that going to play out?
Yeah, so Iran's a very unique special case here. In their situation, they're going to be based in Mexico, even though they're playing on US soil. And they've been told they have to literally fly in and out of the US on the day of their games. And it's been reported that some of their support staff haven't even been issued visas yet to be able to play or participate with the team. So certainly a complex situation, and it'll certainly be an interesting experience once the games are on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it does seem like there are heightened tensions, obviously, around the world. There's a lot going on. Does it feel particularly heightened around this World Cup, Hunter? Like, would you expect to see a bit more activism, demonstrations around this one?
It's hard to say because, of course, the US has had lots of activism and demonstrations over the past year or so, particularly around ICE and what's happened there. So even without a World Cup, it doesn't take much to think of the US as a powder keg. I guess certainly what we've seen is that there has been a suppression of tourism to the US generally because of fears about getting through border control. And even today, a Somali FIFA referee was denied entry at the border, even though he's a literal left referee for the World Cup. So some of those fears are already manifesting.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Hunter Fujak from Deakin University. We're talking about the World Cup, some of the issues around the World Cup, people who maybe not as focused on the sport itself, but some of the geopolitical tensions that surround this global event. I mean, Hunter, we've got text messages coming in now. Someone saying FIFA has killed the festival-like experience. Rich people don't create cultural fun. That's known. It's going to be a terrible World Cup, that person saying, and someone else saying, yeah, American greed ruins everything. There have been a lot of people complaining about the ticket prices, and we just heard before from some Australians who are going to head along, but they paid an absolute fortune to get there. Is this an ongoing issue with the World Cup?
It is certainly an ongoing issue, but it is certainly exacerbated and taken to another level in this particular World Cup. And so the issues date really all the way back to the beginning of being awarded the World Cup in 2018. FIFA refused to release any information about tickets or pricing until September of 2025. And so the opacity around the tickets themselves, it was unusual. When they finally did release tickets, they basically became the most expensive tickets in history of any World Cup. And then the third level of craziness around this situation is the dynamic pricing. So this is the first World Cup where FIFA has introduced variable pricing, which means that the tickets can change in price depending on demand. And that basically saw the price of tickets skyrocket even more from their initial listing price. And basically these tickets are now essentially twice as expensive as the equivalent of 2022 FIFA World Cup. So there's been a lot of issues and that has led to accusations of greed against FIFA.
Yeah, it's massive. And you can understand why a lot of sports fans could be feeling pretty annoyed that maybe they can't afford to go to something that they expected they would be able to go to a few years ago or really were really excited to do that. Is there a real concern about the commercialization of the World Cup?
Look, it's certainly true that all professional sport is commercialized in nature. We only have to look today, NBA Game 5 at Madison, Game 3 at Madison Square Garden. Cheapest ticket was $5,000 US, and front row seats were going for over $1 million. So yeah. When you have a high demand sports event where demand exceeds supply, inevitably you're going to get expensive tickets. But not every sport has to gouge its fans for every maximal dollar. And we can look at something like the International Olympic Committee. When there's an Olympics, there's a ballot, and it doesn't really matter how rich or poor you are. The tickets are pretty reasonably priced, and you might not have a great chance of getting the tickets you want, but everyone has a relatively even chance of getting tickets in Olympic ballots. So it's not always the case that sports have to juice people for every cent. That is a choice that individual sport leagues make.
Yeah, so you're saying it's not just because it's a global event. There are other global events like the Olympics which manage this. Maybe it's a bit more fair in that respect, even if it is pretty hard to get tickets sometimes. I mean, another thing that's also been making headlines, Hunter, is the use of AI in this World Cup, the video assistant referee, all that sort of stuff. Is that going to make a big impact, do you think?
Probably not a huge impact. You know, every sport increasingly relies on technology in various ways, from sports science, you know, monitoring players for health and well-being, to officiating. And so, you know, soccer has had VAR be a point of contention for quite a long period of time now. So AI really continues to build on existing technologies rather than, you know, necessarily create new issues in of itself.
Very interesting stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. Hunter Fujak, Senior Lecturer in Sports Management at Deakin University. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got messages coming through. Someone just saying dynamic pricing is so ugly and evil in all situations. Yeah, we talk a bit about dynamic pricing, not just when it comes to buying tickets for sporting events, but also gigs, other things, big music events that come to Australia as well. We're also getting a lot of messages still in on the Jacinta Allen story that we brought you a little earlier in the show, talking about the Ditch the Witch billboards that have appeared around Melbourne over the past few weeks. Someone saying, in regards to Pauline Hanson, saying get over it. So two wrongs make a right, Pauline, that person asking. Another person saying, I don't see a problem with the billboard, actually. It's not sexist. It's politics. That happens to both men and women. Of course, it's offensive to target anyone like this, except politicians. All politicians play schoolyard games. They're not like normal people, that person says. Okay, very strong opinion there. Someone else just saying, I think we're all on the same page with the slur. I'm more worried about the tensions in the Victorian Labor Party than the leader. One thing Labor should have learned in the past decade is that spilling the leadership doesn't seem to do them any favours. All right, that is all we've got time for on Hack for now.